but I passed the breath test. This is McDaniel Reynolds with the Reynolds Defense Firm, and we specialize in one thing. We represent good people facing DUI charges. While you know that it's illegal to drive with a .08 or greater blood alcohol content, not everyone knows that you could be arrested in Oregon for an alcohol DUI even if you blow well under a .08. This is a pretty loose standard, and it's a way that many of the good people we represent find themselves needing our help when they thought they were doing everything right. The Reynolds Defense Firm. We're solid, we're here if you need us, and we are very good at what we do.
You've got the home of the truth. Back to the bald-faced truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
It is a wonderful Friday with a big college football Saturday ahead, and my co-host on Canzano and Wilner, the podcast, John Wilner, joining us as he does on Fridays. You can read his work at WilnerHotline.com. He does a great job covering college football, the ins and the outs, the games and the drama. John Wilner, where are your eyes in on week four as you head into this weekend?
Well, certainly they're on the Pacific Northwest and waiting to see, curious about whether the games are going to be as big a blowouts as certainly the odds makers think. I cannot remember a situation in which the Civil War and the Apple Cup both had point spreads of, you know, basically 20 or more, right? Sometimes you get one game that's supposed to be a blowout, but not both. And the way things work, I bet you one game is closer than people think.
Wow. Okay, so that's where I want to go, is which of these games do you think will be the one that has more likely chance to be closer?
That's a good question.
On the spot.
You know, the interesting thing is that if you look at it from the standpoint of motivation, I think Washington has got more motivation against the Cougars, partly because of revenge from last year's Husky loss to WSU in Seattle. But I think that the talent disparity is much greater in the Civil War, right? So to me, a lot of it comes down to whether Dan Lanning wants to have any mercy as we get into like the later stages of the third quarter in Eugene, and that game is already 30 points difference. Is he going to call off the Ducks? Because I don't think Jed Fish is going to call off the Huskies if that game is lopsided late. They're going to go for every point they can get.
I go back to last year, and Fish, after the Apple Cup, he looked sick. And he went into the post-game news conference, and, you know, the normal sycophant media members who cover Washington were kind of grilling him a little bit. Like, he ran speed option on the goal line with Will Rogers, and it didn't work out.
Yeah.
And remember, he was adamant that it was the right call, that they just didn't execute, and he seemed annoyed by the whole thing. And I kind of got to wonder, did he spend all offseason annoyed at that? And because Dan Lanning doesn't have that for Oregon State.
He doesn't. And I think Fish, the players also were annoyed at Washington State's celebration on the field. That wasn't in Husky Stadium. It was a Lumen Field. But I think that that has stuck with the Huskies pretty deeply. And they are really going to have a lot more motivation. The Ducks, it's just like, this is almost perfunctory for them. I mean, there's no way Oregon State can keep pace with them. It's just a matter of degrees and motivation. You know, I could see it being, you know, a record-breaking margin in Eugene. But I also think that Lanning will get his third stringers in as soon as he can. And so that you could see the old backdoor cover. Whereas in Pullman, I do not see that happening. I think the Huskies are going to just go for broke all the way until the last minute.
Yeah, and you also have Oregon looking forward to Penn State. That is a big game. You want to be healthy going into that game, so won't be surprised if Dante Moore gets out of the game.
That's true, but the Huskies have Ohio State next week, too. So that's a good point about whether Fish will try to, you know, get Damon Williams out of there maybe to make sure nobody gets hurt. But we'll see. We'll see. It's interesting how they both have there's the rivalry games this week, and then next week is the biggest games of the season, arguably, for both the Huskies and Ducks.
I've wondered for a while, you know, there are some conferences that will sort of account for your natural rival to be in late November. The Big Ten seems to want to marry Washington and Oregon together. Do you have a sense on how difficult it would be for Tony Petitti and the Big 10 to to go, hey, look, you're going to play Washington, but you'll play them early November or midseason, and then we'll give you a window late in the year to play your rival. You know, some conferences do that. Big Ten so far not doing that for other conferences.
Yeah, they're not. It might have a domino effect on the situation because, you know, conference scheduling is when you move one piece and it affects five other things. Perhaps they would look at it, but I think that they want, and their TV partners want, the greatest amount of high quality games for rivalry week in late November, because that's such a huge weekend for TV that Fox, NBC, and CBS would not want to lose what is potentially, you know, a great game. And the other thing is that if the rivalry, the Pacific Northwest rivalries are played in the end of November, then on some years, they aren't going to be Big Ten game. When the game is played in Pullman or in Corvallis, that's not a Big Ten owned game.
Yeah.
So the Big Ten TV partners would not have access to it. And they want as many good games as they can get. They don't want to give up inventory on such a valuable TV weekend, is my guess.
John Wilner, Texas Tech is going to Rice-Eccles Stadium to play Utah. It is a Big 12 game that is, it has got all kinds of big implications to it. I love this game. I love that it's early on Saturday. What are you thinking about as it pertains to that Big 12 matchup?
Well, I'm certainly thinking that these are two teams that could end up winning the Big 12. And I'm thinking that it's a kind of a contrast in styles. I mean, ultimately, Utah would love to run the ball 30 times, whether it's with the tailbacks or quarterback Devin Dampier. And Texas Tech wants to just chuck it left and right. And they got the receivers to do it. The other interesting piece is that, you know, Texas Tech spent $25, $30 million on its roster with NIL. They got all these transfers, high-level transfers coming in to win the Big 12. And here's Utah, which does have transfers, but was not exactly on the high end of the NIL spending spectrum. Kind of old school still in a lot of ways. So it's a contrast in roster acquisition as well as a contrast in playing styles.
John Wilner with us, Bay Area News Group. Dan Lanning came out, you know, the transfer portal window news this week. You know, he supports the idea of one window. He says that, this college football season should all be wrapped up, you know, January 1. And he says the high seeds should be able to host games. And why are we having these long layoffs to try to accommodate the bowl season? Where do you stand on all that and sort of the fallout as you move to one transfer portal window?
Yeah, I'm sure Oregon does not like those layoffs after last year, right? So they are trying to go to one transfer. It's not official. One transfer window early January. They have eliminated a spring window. Interestingly enough, the Big Ten was the only conference that was pushing for a spring window. And they kind of got outvoted. So now there will be one window, maybe just a week in early January, but it might be multiple weeks in December, January. Either way, it's going to overlap with the postseason,
yeah,
with the college football playoff. And that's, you don't want transfers detracting from the attention for your marquee event. It would be like the NFL having free agency during its playoffs. That would never happen. So it's kind of another example of college football being screwed up. But I do agree with Lanning that they need to move the playoff up. It goes too deep into January. There's too much overlap with the NFL postseason. I mean, next season, the college football playoff championship game at the end of the 2026 season is going to be played on January 25th, 2027.
Wow.
It's way too late. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
They do need to move it up. But the problem is, like everything else in college football, it's immensely complicated. If you move it up, one, you're threatening the traditional big bowl partners. You've then got to intrude on the first couple weekends in December, which is Army-Navy, conference championship games. So you'd have to reconfigure the season on the last week of November and the first week of December. There's a lot of moving pieces, and it's going to take them a while to get it figured out, but they have got to move it up. I totally agree with Lanning, and a lot of people do agree with him that it's too late. Going up against the NFL is a losing battle.
Yeah, and you know, you have conference championship games. He's advocating, hey, the following Saturday you should have a playoff game, and high seed should be hosting games, and then you should play every Saturday thereafter. College football is for Saturdays, after all. John Wilner with
us.
But
then you're potentially asking God, I mean, there's no break. You're asking these players to go, I mean, depending on when they have a bye, some year there's only one bye. You're potentially asking these guys to play, you know, 14, 15 consecutive weeks. That's a lot to ask of quote-unquote amateurs.
Wilner, a couple big games that jump out to me. You know, obviously, Cal's got a big football game. They're going to San Diego State. I'm not yet sure what to make of Cal. I love what they're doing. I love that there's enthusiasm. How real are the Bears?
I think the Bears are real, but not entirely of their own doing. they are definitely better, and their quarterback is really good, the freshman. But my God, they got lucky with the ACC schedule. They don't play Clemson, Florida State, Miami, or Georgia Tech. They got the ACC middle and lower level teams. It's almost like the Calgarithm created the schedule for the Bears itself. So because of that, you can look at them and say, yeah, you know what? They got a chance to win 8 or 9 games, because there's no game in which they are going to be a sure underdog, right? I mean, Duke, Carolina, Virginia Tech, Stanford, Louisville. I think they got Virginia, Boston College. I mean, it's one winnable game after another. Now, they're going to stumble, partly because they're Cal and they find ways to stumble, and partly just because it's hard to go, you know, 10-2, 11-1. But they certainly can get to a new high under Justin Wilcox for a win total. They could go 8-4, 9-3 with the schedule. Absolutely.
Jaron Keawe Sangapulitelli is the freshman quarterback
nice
you mentioned.
Work on that.
Yeah. And his brother, John, is the quarterback at Portland State. How about that?
Yep.
So get this. You know, everybody's already talking about him getting into the portal and being gone. I'm not so sure, given that he's already seen kind of the big time at Oregon, and he got in the portal and went to Cal. I also hear that Cal may be mobilizing already to try to retain him. What shot do you give Justin Wilcox of keeping that kid?
Better than 50-50 because of what happened. It's not only that he was at Oregon and went in the portal. It's that he started off at Cal. He didn't sign with the Bears, but he was committed to them. They recruited him before anybody else. He was committed to them for months. Oregon came in the last minute with a sweet offer and got him to sign. He joins the team, doesn't like the vibe, and says, you know what? I want to go where I'm comfortable, which is Cal. So he transfers to Cal and enrolls for the winter semester. He's done the grass is greener thing, realize that's not the case. So I think, you know, and then you add in the relationships that the staff has had with him. The fact that Nick Rolovich
yes.
is a kind of a Hawaii guy. He's Cal's senior offensive analyst. He works with Sangapulitelli every day. He's comfortable. It's almost like a family situation. And I think if Cal can come up with a reasonable financial offer, he will stay. That's my guess.
Yeah, and you know, I am told he got very close to 7 figures to sign with Oregon and go to Oregon, and I do not think he had to give that back, Wilner. So I think he's already sort of cut the check, cashed the check, so to speak, and we'll see what happens.
Well,
he'll definitely
be 7-figure guy.
Yeah,
he'll definitely be 7-figure guy now. And you know, I mean, who knows, the Georgias and the Ohio States or whoever will come after him. But I think because he's already basically done that and didn't like it, increases the chances that he will just say, no, I'm happy where I am.
I'm with you on that. UCLA, they made a change. Deshaun Foster is out. They are a mess. You know, we've talked about this on the podcast in great depth, but I want to touch on this. What do you think they do? What's the right move for UCLA?
Well, they have to figure out what they want to be and how they're going to get there before they actually go to the market and try to hire a coach. Because if they just go now or next week and say, hey, come coach for us, that coach is going to want to know, okay, what is my salary for my coaching staff? What is your plan for revenue share? What is your plan for NIL? This and that. And they don't have... What is your plan for building out the football staff? Are you going to have a general manager? That kind of thing. They don't have any of that. In terms of the everything buttoned down and answers to questions that the candidates and the agents are going to be asking. They got to take 2 months if necessary, figure out what they want to be, how they're going to get there, what their resources are. Then they go to the market and they say, here's our package, here's our offer, who's interested? And I think that they will have some candidates, right? UCLA is not a job for a lot of people because it's a hard job in the Big Ten because a lot of people don't want to live in LA. But for some coaches, it's a pretty damn good job. And so they will have, if they can get the right package offer together, they will have some good options. But I think that we are months away from having any idea who's going to take that job.
Michigan State, speaking of Jonathan Smith, who could be a candidate, Michigan State goes to USC.
Oh, yeah.
They are a double-digit underdog going to the Coliseum. Do you give Michigan State a shot to be in this game, to keep it close? I kind of think Jonathan Smith will find a way to make that a ball game, but what do you think?
I'm surprised by that line. I think that's easy money. I think 18 or 19 points?
Yeah.
Way too much. Aiden Childs is really good, and he's going home. It's a homecoming for Michigan State's quarterback and head coach. Childs is from Long Beach and was not recruited by USC. So I think he's going to be ready to roll, and I don't trust the Trojans to be able to execute well enough to blow out a good team. And I think Michigan State is, probably a 7-win, maybe 8-win team with Childs, and they're very well coached. I like this one. I think it's going to be a close game into the fourth quarter.
I agree with you on that. I thought easy money as well when I saw double digits there. Scott Barnes.
And that fourth quarter, by the way, that fourth quarter will be at about 1:30 a.m. Eastern.
There you go. No one will see it. None of the voters will see it. Scott Barnes, the AD at Oregon State, came on this show earlier this week, and he gave Trent Bray a vote of confidence, and I took it as a real vote of confidence, more of a, hey, we're in it with him. They don't want to change horses here, and they're looking at the front-loaded schedule. What do you make of Oregon State's decision to kind of back Trent Bray right now while UCLA is saying no to Deshaun Foster?
Yeah, I think that it's two different situations. I don't think that the Bray is really that much necessarily more qualified to win at Oregon State than Foster was at UCLA. But I don't think the Beavers are necessarily under the same pressure to make a change that the Bruins were. And they're rolling the dice, and it might work out because you said it. The back half of the schedule has a lot of winnable games. If they could somehow get through the next few weeks, he's got a chance to win 3 or 4 games, and then they have a little bit of momentum going in the offseason they could try to build on. But it's also risky because if things go sideways, you lose the cost. At some point, the cost of keeping him outweighs the cost to make a change. And it's costly to make a change. You got to buy out the coach and the staff. You got to hire a whole new staff. It is costly. And it's up to Barnes to decide when that tipping point happens. I agree with him right now, but I would not, if I were Scott Barnes, I would not say to myself, we are sticking with him the whole season.
Yeah.
They got to be flexible on this.
I'm kind of looking at, he's going to be 0-4 after the Civil War game. And then there's Houston. That could be 0-5. And then there's Appalachian State, Wake Forest. And I start to look at like 0-7 as a tipping point where if like you don't show, like you got to have something to show after about the 7th game of the season. If you don't, then I think you're the AD. You have to kind of look and go, okay, where is the diminishing return here?
Yeah, that seems about right to me. I mean, Houston, I think, is good. And I would not be surprised if Houston ends up in the top half of the Big 12. They just beat Colorado badly. And going to App State is not easy. So I'm kind of with you on that. And then you wonder, right, they're 0-6, they're coming back home, and man, where are their heads, right? At that point, if you're Barnes, you got to wonder, has Bray lost the team? I think that part of the calculation is just the way the second half of last year ended as well. Yes. Like, this isn't just a team that, you know, did well last year and has just hit a rough patch. It's been bad for 11 months, you know, right? I mean, the last
300 days, what, six, seven more than games? 300 days before since they won. It's been, you know,
there you go.
It's just not a good feeling, I think, for the Oregon State community. All right, John Wilner, find him at wilnerhotline.com. I appreciate you joining us, my friend.
Thanks for having me.
Leave it here. Coming up, what's on tap for the weekend?